This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. A beautiful Sunday morning. I was just out on the WGN Storm Center patio without a coat. I was wearing my Blackhawk sweater. It is absolutely gorgeous out. No excuse not to get out there and enjoy the day today. Temperatures forecast to get up to 60 degrees. And it's probably because of the fact that I don't have a coat on that I'm now into like week three of my cold that I can't seem to get rid of. But no, just a gorgeous day out there. Some details emerging from the results of the South Carolina primary, the Democratic primary that Hillary Clinton won. 370,000 votes cast. Hillary Clinton got 271,000, 73.5%. Bernie Sanders, 26%, roughly 96,000 votes. And just in case you're wondering, former Chicago mayoral candidate Willie Wilson, who is running for president, if you didn't know, he's running for president. He got, now remember, 370,000 votes cast. Willie Wilson got 1,321, or 0.4%, narrowly edging out Martin O'Malley, who dropped out of the race weeks ago. So those are some of the details. And everybody talks about Bernie Sanders and the youth vote, and there's no doubt that is his big base of support. But among African-American voters 65 and over, Hillary Clinton won 96% to 3%. That's some of the results of the exit polls coming out of South Carolina. And, of course, we're moving ahead, Super Tuesday, and that's going to be a very, very big day on both sides, both for the Democrats and Republicans. And that will kind of set the table for our Republican and Democratic primaries here in Illinois 2 weeks later on March 15th. Reminder, too, on Monday, widespread early voting starts. It had already started. You had to go to your local election authority to vote. But if you check on the websites in your counties, you'll see that local early voting will be starting on Monday for the Republican and Democratic primaries. Well, joining me now on the phone is my friend Brad Cole. Brad is the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, and the Muni League last week announced its kind of legislative package moving cities forward. Brad, thanks for joining me this morning.
Yeah, good morning.
I noted the number one issue that you're looking for out of the legislature is to make it automatic that the money that comes from Springfield for local communities, make it automatic rather than making it subject to appropriation so it doesn't get caught up in any kind of future impasse.
Yeah, that's just entirely a coincidence with the fact that there's no state budget right now. So we learned a lesson this year. Of course, we were very thankful for the General Assembly and the governor approving the release of motor fuel tax, 911 fees, casino and video gaming, and some other funds that are pass-throughs. They approved that in December through some legislation that was passed and signed. But it showed us that there is a disconnect in the release of some of those locally administered funds that are collected by the state and just passed back through non-general revenue funds. So we're going to try to correct that going forward so we don't have to go back and get legislation if, in fact, there's another budget impasse.
And indeed, as you said, they're just pass-throughs. They're nothing. There is no state take or anything there. It's just an appropriation. The state doesn't get anything out of that. They just collect it.
They just collect it, and they collect it because these are, you know, it's easier for the state to collect it, and some of the fees should be collected by the state. But it's non-general revenue, does not affect the state budget. It's just a simple pass-through. But without the appropriation authority, they can't release it back to local governments. We were able to get that done in early December, just a couple months ago, in time for the winter. And, of course, we were concerned about motor fuel taxes being released so that we could fund the keeping the streets, you know, plowed and salted and safe for the wintertime. But also the big one is 911 fees to keep the dispatch centers open and be able to respond when somebody calls for help locally.
And truly, this has never been an issue before.
No, it has not been. And of course, there's a lot of things now that have not been an issue in the past that we're seeing with this budget impasse. But these are local funds for local programs that are paid locally and administered locally. So, you know, we're hopeful that this legislation will pass. It was carried in the House by Representative Moylan and in the Senate by Senator Tom Cullerton last year, passed overwhelmingly, signed immediately. So we're hoping that the same will happen this year, but it will be for a continuing appropriation ongoing so that we don't have to revisit it every year.
Now, the governor recently delivered his budget address, and one thing that wasn't mentioned among several things that weren't specifically mentioned was the issue of the local municipal share of the state income tax, the
right.
Local Government Distributive Fund, LGDF, for you wonks
yeah.
out there. And I don't know about you, but I still think there is some concern that if and when any kind of budget agreement is ever reached, that they may be looking to dip into the city's share of the income tax.
Well, we're certainly concerned about that. And last year, the governor's budget address did include a proposed reduction in LGDF. It was never embraced by the members of the General Assembly and legislative leaders. And I think that was in part because they understand the impact that these dollars have locally, but also because local mayors and aldermen and women throughout the state rallied together to let their legislators understand that the municipal share of income tax is 8 cents on the dollar. And with that 8 cents, we're able to fund most of the basic operations of local government. If the state can't fund their operation on 92 cents, it's really their issue, and not to impede the release of the 8 cents for us. And so our share is going a long way to provide for health, safety, welfare of the communities that we represent. And I think the General Assembly understood that. I talked to the governor about that this year. I think he understands it. I think he always did understand it. Of course, he's trying to fill a budget hole, so he has to come up with some recommendations. But everybody involved seems to be complimentary of the fact that those dollars are spent wisely and well spent locally. It was not included in his budget address this year. We're thankful for that, but we're also, you know, making sure that we keep an eye on it in case there is something that has to come along last minute, and it's certainly a place where they could look.
Well, and last year, too, and it's still, I think, an ongoing concern, is it was kind of the double whammy of wanting to take some of the city's share of the income tax, while at the same time, and it still remains a very high priority, of the governor wanting a property tax freeze.
Yes, and the property tax freeze is something that affects a lot of local taxing entities. The schools obviously have about two-thirds of the tax bill generally in most communities, so that's the biggest piece of it. The municipalities are lumped into that, and our position is that we're opposed to a permanent freeze just because that's often where the funds come from to pay for pension obligations and bonded indebtedness for capital improvements. This year, you know, I think that that is an area that there could be some middle ground found between the governor and the General Assembly, but more likely in a temporary freeze. And our position would be to make sure that local governments are not harmed by that, that some of the ways and places where we spend those dollars would be protected. But a property tax freeze is something we definitely, you know, are under the microscope with all these different revenue sources because of the state's current situation and trying to find every dollar they can.
We're speaking with Brad Cole, the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. .818 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Joining me on the phone is Brad Cole, the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. And Brad, before the break, we were talking about the issue of a property tax freeze and the governor having that as part of, you know, his agenda, and the concern about municipalities wanting flexibility. I note as part of the Moving Cities Forward agenda that the Municipal League has put forward, there's also an item about expanding the eligibility of communities to become home rule. And I'm wondering if maybe that isn't some kind of an alternative there when it comes to issues like freezing property taxes.
It is, and we think this is a critical way for the state to allow local governments to be able to have some flexibility, especially in these uncertain times. Right now, home rule communities are established either by referendum or if they reach the 25,000 population mark. And so at 25,000, they're automatically a home rule community, and that's under the Illinois Constitution. Our proposal through the Moving City Forward is to lower that population threshold to 5,000. And that has to be done in two steps. One, we're asking the General Assembly to pass a joint resolution that will put the question on the ballot in November for the people to decide, because it is a constitutional amendment. And then the second step is obviously to have it pass at the referendum in November. And with the in the 1970 Constitution, when home rule was established and 25,000 was the mark, I think there was probably some discussion about should smaller communities be eligible or not, but that's where it stayed. And currently there are 211 home rule communities, some of them by population, some of them by referendum. By lowering the population threshold to 5,000, this would open up an additional 173 communities to be eligible by the population threshold. And these are still small communities, but larger. This is a threshold that the state has set for other statutory requirements, the 5,000 mark. So we think in that mid-size range to smaller range size community, it gives them the flexibility. It's not about taxing authority or some of the things that are often touted as a reason to vote against home rule. But it's just more flexibility. You can have additional regulations. You can do some things with crime-free housing. There are intergovernmental agreements that can be entered into. So just any number of things. And we think it's a good move, given all of these other factors that are imposing negative impacts against municipalities, to give them one more tool in their belt.
Currently there is the ability for local communities to do it by local referendum. I guess I'm curious, why then go the next step and just kind of make it automatic?
Well, it does create an additional expense, and sometimes the local communities aren't sure if they want to go through that, whether or not it would pass. But this is really a broader public policy issue, and understanding that local communities are making a lot of the decisions these days and are carrying out a lot of the public service, why is 25,000 the mark? Why shouldn't it be 5,000? With 1,297 municipalities in Illinois, adding another 173 to the home rule ranks is really not tipping the scale anyway. And so it's just a broader public policy question, and it would allow for, I think, more people to weigh in on the issue than just the specific communities that are being proposed for it if they've done it themselves with the referendum.
Another issue on the Moving Cities Forward agenda from the Municipal League is local control over prevailing wage decisions. And prevailing wage, very much a topic in Springfield as part of what the governor is talking about as far as his agenda regarding unions. And I have to wonder, and this is something I've thought too, basically prevailing wage that municipalities, local governments that are doing public works projects have to pay the prevailing union wage for those projects. And I have always thought that there might be some kind of flexibility here about not on high dollar projects, not like, building a building or something, but some of these smaller kind of projects that, frankly, in some municipalities, it'd probably be hard to find a union shop to do them.
Yeah, and that's the case where in these small projects, and particularly in small communities, if you have a limited amount of resources to spend on a project, the further you can stretch it, the better for your local improvements. And so we're not proposing to do away with prevailing wage or anything like that. We understand the reason for it. What we're asking for is to establish an exemption up to a specific dollar amount that would allow for the local community to be able to spend those dollars. And maybe there aren't that many options. Maybe there are only a few contractors in an area, and they're bidding the work, but they're actually having to raise their price to be able to meet the prevailing wage. And so this would just establish a threshold level where under a dollar amount, the community could have some flexibility. And we're not talking about a high dollar amount either. I think, for us, the maximum would maybe be $200,000, but there's some proposals out there that are even less than that, $20,000, $50,000 for a project. And that allows those small communities, small projects to be able to be stretched a little bit further. And that's what we're looking for, is just some flexibility, not trying to do away with prevailing wage, just trying to make it so that it's easier for communities to get some progress.
Well, and at the same time, too, frankly, to encourage keeping the business in the community rather than having it in some cases as well. Also, workers' comp reform. And, of course, this, again, another highly debated topic in Springfield, part of the governor's turnaround agenda. What exactly is the municipal league looking for here when it comes to workers' comp changes?
Well, we have a number of things we're looking at and suggesting, and using the AMA guidelines for permanent impairment, based on some of the current numbers that AMA uses. But in particular, there was a 2012 appellate court case that changed the determination, for instance, on an injury to a shoulder, changed it from an injury of an arm to an injury of the man as a whole. Well, what that does is it allows for multiple compensable claims against the man as a whole instead of being capped at 100% of an arm, and that changes the dynamics a little bit. Now, I want to also state very clearly that our goal is not to do away with workers' compensation or to harm or reduce benefits for anybody who was injured on the job. We have a lot of public works employees, public safety personnel who do hard jobs, and sometimes they get injured. We want them to be safe, but we also are trying to monitor and manage the compensable claims that the taxpayer is paying. And so some of the suggestions are to clarify previous policies, and particularly this appellate court case a few years ago, others to use some AMA guidelines and standards from across the country, and just look at, how the best way to determine compensation amounts and calculations.
Does this in any way affect the causation standard, which seems to be a very big sticking point?
No, we're not talking about causation. That is probably the bigger issue, and it's the issue that's out there that is most highly debated. That's not what we're getting into. We're just talking about some of the nuances, I suppose, mm-hmm. and trying to clarify some of the existing case law that's out there through some legislative remedies, just to give a little bit of relief. We're not talking about causation at all.
Brad, you've seen the legislative process over the years. Don't you think workers' comp is truly one of those things where you could get kind of a, get business and labor and the interested parties together and sit down in a room and kind of come up with an agreed bill?
I think so. And I think in the past there have been some very positive cooperative discussions and some results that have come on workers' compensation. I think that's been proven on the labor and management side. And I think this is a time where this could be a compromise issue where people could come together. And that's why we were proposing, not significant, not massive, not really life-changing proposals. We're suggesting things that are common middle ground where we think we could come together and provide a compromise package on a big issue to see some success, really, that both sides could feel good about, and then the people of Illinois could benefit from.
Brad, good luck with the Springfield agenda. Hopefully something can get done in Springfield.
we're hopeful.
Maybe you'll get a package before the budget gets done. Actually, I would bet odds that the chances are good you could probably get what you want out of Springfield before a budget gets done.
We'll take it.
That's Brad Cole, Executive Director of the Illinois Municipal League. Thanks, Brad, for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.